Listen, Dave the Curmudgeon here. Scooby-Doo is for kids, okay? All you adults, you got your porno and your freaking internet and your world wide web so you can look at all the boobies and all the destruction in the world. Leave Scooby-Doo for the kids.
Welcome to Splurch, a Parlapod podcast. I am your host, David Schultz, and I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Marco. Say hey there, Marco.
Hey there, everybody.
Hey, what's going on? What's new with you?
It's been a light week. I haven't been too busy. Uh-oh, someone just rang the doorbell. Hold up, give me one sec. I'm expecting a package.
Okay.
Hold up.
This gives me time to start Dave's karaoke hour. Actually, it's not really an hour because he's only going to the door for a few minutes. What song should I sing? You got the touch! You got the power! Yeah! That's all I got.
All right, you're gonna be excited because I ordered some comics, and there's one in particular that I think you might enjoy, so let me quickly break that out for you, and then I will show you.
Oh, great. So this is a moment where we're starting to record our podcast. We had to stop because Marco had a ring at the door. It's not even a thing, ring at the door. Someone rang his doorbell with a package. They have a package in hand, and he has comics, and he wants to show me what he got. Let's see. What do you got there, Marky Mark? What do you got there, Marco?
Prepare yourself, David. Prepare yourself.
I'm prepared. Ready? I'm sitting.
Make sure you...
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, right.
Wow.
So this is a podcast, so no one can see it. But it is issue number 56 of Swamp Thing, My Blue Heaven, which happens to
my
be...
My all-time favorite.
Yeah, you go. So I just got it.
My all-time favorite. Is that the only thing that arrived in the package?
No, and then there was like some other books.
But you knew that was the one that will tickle my fancy the most.
Yes.
Absolutely. That is my all-time favorite issue of Swamp Thing, Swampy number 56, My Blue Heaven. It's well documented. Have you ever had a chance to read that?
Only in trade, and I actually opened the I opened it right now, and at the very beginning, like on the inside of the cover, there's actually a letter there that reads about Swamp Thing being deceased and having been thrown out. I think it's by the Gotham City Police Department.
Right.
So that was really cool. You know, that doesn't come up on the trade.
No, it doesn't. Only in the individual issue. And I actually have a graded copy of that issue because I'm not a big into graded comics, really. I only have like three, and they're all Swamp Thing issues, and Swamp Thing issues that mean something to me. But the pride and joy that I have is Swamp Thing 56. I have it behind me actually right now. Again, we're talking about things that listeners can't see, but it's one of my pride and joys, again, being, I think, one of the best Swamp Thing stories ever told in a single issue. So cool, man. I'm glad you added that to your collection. I'm proud of you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm super pumped.
So I guess that kind of wraps up what you've been up to. I mean, stoked that you're buying comics, cool comics.
I got it from my comic shop, and they're mm-hmm. really cheap, and they have good quality. This is actually graded as very fine, and I think it cost me like $3.
Yeah, that's the best thing about that issue. And actually, there's a lot of stuff out there that I appreciate that really isn't very expensive. The first comic I ever got when I was a kid was The Incredible Hulk Annual number 11, and that one can be had really cheap if you hop on eBay or, again, like a My Comic Shop or Midtown Comics. It's like a few bucks.
Yeah.
And to me, the value is
astronomical.
It's sentimental, you know what I mean? So I've actually bought a few copies of each of those issues because you can have them for so cheap.
Right.
And the story, and again, Swamp Thing number 56, I consider one of Alan Moore's best stories. So to get that for a few bucks, man, woo, you win. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah. So I guess, what have you been up to?
Ah, who cares? I the only thing about me is I'm fully engrossed. But anyway, yes, I am totally into my fantasy football league that can be found at spmleague.com. I lost week one, big disappointment, but fantasy football will dominate my life for the next few months. So that's a big thing for me. And, speaking of which, I actually want to give a shout out to a friend of ours on Twitter. They are at The Sports Stance, and they can also be found at thesportsstance.com. and they have a sports podcast. And of course, I'm a big sports fan, and they had me on their most current episode to do an NFL pick. And I really appreciate it because the dudes over there are super cool. And I,
super cool.
Yeah, man. And I got to tell you, I listen to a lot of sports podcasts, and as far as quality content, you name it, they're number one. So anybody out there listening right now on podcastradionetwork.net or anywhere else that we host the podcast, please go check out The Sports Stance. But enough about sports, because again, I seem to say this every week, enough about sports and fantasy and what have you. We are a comic book podcast. People tune in to hear about comics. And we did some reading this week, and the first issue we're going to discuss is the brand new Doom Patrol from the Young Animal imprint of DC Comics. Marco, what were your impressions of this issue?
I enjoyed it. It felt very Doom Patrol-esque in the Grant Morrison sense. You know, there was a lot going on, and you weren't totally sure what everything was, who everybody was, what the whole idea is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, just spoke, okay, wow, this is like Grant Morrison stuff. This is out there. It's trippy. The characters are interesting, but they're super weird. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the next issue.
See, I'm the opposite. I didn't care for it one bit. Gerard Way is the writer. Full disclosure, I've never read Umbrella Academy.
Me neither.
Our Parlapod host, John Benedict, loved this issue, and he loves Umbrella Academy. And I had gotten into a little conversation with him via Facebook Messenger. How this issue bored me to tears, to be perfectly honest.
What?
Yeah, it really did. It bored me to tears. I didn't think there was anything special or unique about it. I think it's like a really cheesy B movie. And by the first issue alone, I really can't say this series is off to a hot start. I am going to give it a few more issues because, again, when I debated this a little bit with John, he said, Gerard Way, you've got to give him time. As a writer, he says he's good at leading up to things. Again, I'm not familiar with his writing. I just know I hated his band. So I will give it a few issues. I thought the art by Nick Darrington was perfectly fine and suitable. But the story itself, like you said, being very Morrison-y.
Mm.
Can I even say that? Morrison-y? Anyway, it almost felt like a carbon copy Grant Morrison book to me. It didn't read like a Gerard Way being unique. It was like, oh, I know. I understand maybe he was trying to pay homage to the past of the Morrison Doom Patrol run. But I was more of a fan of the Doom Patrol from the 80s. Some of those older stories, and they were a little bit more traditional. That's the Doom Patrol I liked more. So even as a teenager, when I would read some of these Doom Patrol, the 90s stuff, I was like, yeah, it's trippy, it's cool, but it's not my bag, baby.
Mm.
So yeah, this book really, really wasn't up my alley. And like you said, it's really trippy. There's even a point where, her partner's name is Sam, and he's eating a gyro. And he decides to throw it in the trash, and it looks like there's another universe that exists in the gyro. And I'm pronouncing that right, too, gyro. I'm not a big Greek food guy. It's spelled gyro, but I believe it's spelled or pronounced gyro.
Yeah, it is in Greek.
Okay, so I want to make sure I didn't insult anybody who might be the fans or a fan of the gyro. But
I mean, you can call it a gyro. It's no big deal. I don't think so.
I like gyro better. I like the word gyro better. I don't know. It sounds more like a weird, like Jack Kirby science tech thing like Mr. Miracle would use. Yeah, the gyro schematic. What? Yeah, the Sommel flange. Yeah, I mean, that's another trippy thing. It's like, okay, he's trying to get like, I don't know, too into it for me, man. This issue, I just, again, well, one issue alone, I wasn't buying into the whole trippy aspect of it. I wasn't buying into all the psychedelia.
Mm.
Even the weird encounters, like, later in the issue, like, she brings home...
Oh, the robot, the metal guy.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, she gets home with Robot Man, and... or she calls him Robot Man, rather. And the roommate is bitching about the rent, and a mysterious woman shows up, sings like a... I can't remember anyway, but she fucking blows up the roommate.
That was funny.
Yeah, and she's just like, it's not my birthday, and it's just weird. It's trippy, you know, but for me, I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? I don't know, man. I'm going to give it a few issues, and I'm going to do that because John tends to be right sometimes about, you know, being patient with things. But yeah, the first issue, I don't know, man. Glad you liked it.
Yeah, I dug it, and the art was cool. You know, it was like, it was cartoony-ish, but not so loose. Because you know how sometimes that they'll make it very weird and trippy. This was more, I'm going to say, maybe even like Darwin-esque. It was very just like controlled cartoony art.
I can see that. I can see that comparison. Plus, it had an element of fun to it.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't anything. The book wasn't taking itself too seriously, so I definitely enjoyed that. It was weird.
I did notice in the credits, as I'm looking at it now, it's like, and this is funny to me, you know, my aversion to variant covers. Mm-hmm. It's like they give the credits, this person colors, letterer Todd Klein, Nick Darrington, main cover. And then it's like variant covers, Brian Ballin, Sanford Green, Jamie Hernandez, Babs Tarr, Brian Chippendale. It's like, how many variant covers did they have? How many do you need? You know, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, man, there was like bundles of them.
Yeah, I saw there was one where there's like a peel-off sticker. You can peel off the Euro.
Wasn't that the main cover?
Is that the main cover? I read mine digitally.
Yeah, me too. I got the
main cover has a Euro on it, but I don't know if the main cover you can peel the sticker, because the Euro is a sticker that you peel back and it reveals the cosmos.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that. No.
Yeah, and someone asked about it on Facebook, and me reading the issue, they're like, oh, should I be reading, you know, more into this? And I'm like, I don't know, because, you know, at one point they refer to the contents of a Euro, the perfect mix of meat and veggies, as like a comparison to the universe. So maybe that's the only reason it's there. I don't know.
I like the cover, though. I don't know if you're a classic rock guy, but it was a reference to the Velvet Underground with Nico, a cover by Andy Warhol. The art style, it's Andy Warhol. It looks like, and it's made to look like Andy Warhol.
Listen, I can appreciate someone trying to, you know, do something unique and original. And I did kind of, I don't know if I'm unfairly saying that he's trying too much to be like Morrison. Mm. I can appreciate those kind of stories, you know, but I'm not going to be the kind of reader that's going to sit here and say it's fucking genius just because it's different.
Okay, yeah, I get you.
And there's a lot of people out there like, oh, Gerard Way, he's such a freaking mastermind. This is why they gave him his own imprint. And for me, being the only book of his I've read to date, I'm not impressed. So again, we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah, we just got to ride it out for now.
So if you had, since we kind of disagree on the story on this, if you had to rate it from 1 to 10, what would you give it?
I gave it like a 7.5. It wasn't anything stellar or groundbreaking, but it did remind me of Morrison and that quirky style. So 7.5 from me.
I really give the story a 4. Like I said, I wasn't my favorite. But anyway, since we kind of disagreed on that, but it is only one issue. So again, the jury is still out. I also read All-Star Batman number 2 this week. I'm a big fan of this book. I think Scott Snyder is a fantastic Bat writer. Mm. And as far as Rebirth goes, it's my favorite Bat title. I know you glanced over this book. What were your thoughts on this one?
For me, I specifically enjoyed the art. It was awesome. It looked super like painted. I enjoyed that. The story itself, I didn't get a chance to read the first issue. If this is what it's gonna look like, I definitely want to go back and read the first issue. You know, they're fighting on a train, which is super cool. It's like Western kind of thing, you know.
Well, I can tell you, even though you haven't read the first issue, I'm not trying to spoil it for you, but it's like Batman's on a road trip.
Oh, you were telling me.
Yeah. And it's mysterious. He's trying to bring him somewhere. We don't know where exactly he's going, but at the same time, Two-Face has put out a bounty on Batman's head.
Right.
And this is why all these supervillains are popping up out of basically nowhere, trying to pop a cap in Batman's derriere, because they want the payday. And in this issue, it starts off and you see, this actually has a lot of cameos, this issue.
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
Killer Croc is in it. King Shark is in it. Aaron Helsinger, a.k.a. Emiko Dalia. I can't even pronounce his name right. KG Beast. Penguin's in it. Jesus, there's so many cameos.
Yeah, a bunch of people.
I'm glad that you said you like the art, because the pencils are by John Romita Jr. And a lot of people said he's lost his touch over the years. Mm. And I tended to agree with them, being a big fan of his when I was younger. And especially when he made the leap from Marvel to DC, I really thought his pencils took a downturn.
Okay.
When he was doing Superman. Yeah, I wasn't a fan. I'm like, Jesus, it's like he's phoning it in. I think he's really back with All-Star Batman, Danny Meekie on inks. You notice that you like the colors, the way some of it looks painted.
Yeah.
That is by someone by the name of Dean White. This book really looks beautiful. I think the story is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact they took it out of Gotham to show that Batman can still do some cool stuff without the city surrounding him.
Right.
I like the idea that you're doing kind of like a road trip with a villain, even though everybody's out to kill you. So props off to Scott Snyder for coming up with that concept. It's pretty nifty. I said Doom Patrol was like a cheesy B movie.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is like sequential art cinema.
This is the blockbuster?
Yeah, this is the blockbuster. Like you said, it's like a Western. They're fighting on top of a train. For me, with all like the various locales where they're traveling, all the villains, all the action, there's tons of action. You were talking about the 007 comics last pod.
Mm-hmm.
This reminded me of something almost James Bond-esque, where there's like a lot of gadgets, a lot of tricks, a lot of cool fight sequences. So I totally dug this issue. I loved it.
Wait, Declan Shalvey, he did the second part of this.
Yeah, there's always a backup with, you don't want to call him the new Robin, but essentially he's a new Robin Duke, and Scott Snyder writes it, and yeah, he draws it. That's also a cool backup feature, and I'm not a really big Duke fan, mm-hmm. but it's cool. It's a cool story thus far, 2 issues in.
Who is that, Duke? Is he new?
Yeah, he's fairly new. He was from the We Are Robin series, and he actually, in the tail end of the New 52 Batman, he was in that as well. I remember, if I remember correctly, he popped in during Zero Year when Riddler took over Gotham City.
Oh, he was that little kid.
Yeah, but he's gotten older, oh. And now he's an ally of Batman. Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
You got it, dude.
He like has his own little universe now, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with the Batman books, and I haven't been really thrilled with them as a whole. The solo book, Detective Comics.
Mm.
I don't really like all the team up so much, and I complained that Detective Comics to me was more of a team book rather than a Batman book.
Right.
And the Batman book, they made it for the first few issues with these Gotham twins, the Gothams. And I'm like, Jesus, I don't want to read about these superhero Superman clones, the Gothams rather. And All-Star Batman to me is just a fun ass Batman romp. So definitely 2 thumbs up from me. Love an All-Star Batman. For me, it's probably one of the best, if not the best, Rebirth book out to date.
Cool. Yeah, it looks really interesting. Just skimming it, it just looks awesome. The art, the story, the little bits that I've been picking up, it looks really cool. I'm definitely going to be picking up. I like Snyder. He's a good writer. He's always been...
Yeah, you can't go wrong,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's always treated Batman well, you know, during his run, so I can't complain.
It's actually a really cool sequence where on the cover of number one,
mm-hmm.
Batman's holding like this really weird like batarang. It looks like some kind of like boomerang thing, but you don't know what the hell it is.
Mm-hmm.
And in this issue, he actually uses it and to quite a cool effect against Killer Croc. So now that we know I've given All-Star Batman my highest recommendation, are there any other reads that you had this week that you're really keen on?
This week? I haven't really read all that much. My pull list was pretty short, I think. Like for the past like 2 weeks, it was a max of like 3 books. And I haven't gotten a chance to actually go into the city and pick it up.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I think it was just like, Scooby-Doo or something. And
you bought Scooby-Doo?
Yeah, the new one, the Apocalypse.
Oh, Christ. Listen, dude.
It's No.
We're going to...
Wait. No, wait.
You go. Okay, you go.
All right. You know the old cartoons, right? From like the 60s and all that.
Of course.
So think of that kind of character dynamic, that goofiness, but just put up in a little bit more serious. The characters artistically are more updated, you know, by Jim Lee and all that stuff. The story all of a sudden becomes super serious and...
Well, hence why it's called Scooby-Doo Apocalypse. Come on, man.
Well, yeah, in the sense where like the stakes are higher.
Uh-huh.
That kind of
thing. Well, yeah, you're not pulling off a rubber mask going, oh, it was Mr., I don't know, Tiddlywinks, and he didn't want the convenience store to close down, so he sold the kids cigarettes. Soinks! Geez, Scoobs! Cigarettes are bad! Yeah, none of that shit.
Because there are actual consequences now, it just feels a little more of like a mystery thing. Sure, some of the things artistically, actually a lot of the things artistically, from the way that they look to the way that the mystery machine's like a tank or something, you know, but still the characters are there, and that for me is enough to draw me in and keep me there. Because the same thing I was talking about in last pod, you know, for me it's about keeping the characters true to themselves. You can change everything else around them, but as long as I can recognize the characters, then it's a good enough book for me. So I think that they're respecting the characters enough to make it an entertaining book, and they're just plopping them in a new situation.
I read the first issue and I thought it was hot garbage. And listen, I got to tell you something. I love the creative team. I really do. I love the creative team. Giffen and Demades, I've told you and I've said numerous times before, Justice League International was one of my favorite books of all time. The art by Howard Porter. I love Howard Porter's art. They were actually, all three of them were the team on Justice League 3000, which was a book I enjoyed. But for me, I don't think Scooby-Doo needs this. I don't think any of these Hanna-Barbera characters need these massive updatings to make them, I don't know, zombie fighters, monster hunters in this new millennia, driving tanks and everything else, making it more adult. It's a thing for kids. Keep it a kids thing. For me, I'm just saying, I know you like, again, we talk about Afterlife with Archie with you, and you like these, reimagining of these old characters. But for me, man, Scooby-Doo, just leave it alone, bro. Leave it alone. And I couldn't stand that first issue. I thought it was a jarbled mess. I don't know. I can't imagine someone buying this and being like, this is a good book.
Well, it's not that it's like awesome, but it's enough that I'm like, it's like, oh, it's like, I'm keeping up with it because the story is entertaining at least. And the characters are cool enough.
Not my thing, you know. I know I can be a pissy old prick when it comes to some books, but this one I just really, and I wanted to like it. I really did. And I went in, and I'm not a big Scooby-Doo fan, so it's not like I'm holding on to some, you know, cherished memories of the cartoon. But the book to me,
oh, I'm a big fan.
See, the book to me was just like, oh, this is kind of messy. It's not very tight. I love the creative team, but I'm never going to buy this again. But on that note, why don't we take a little break? Why do I even say on that note? Does that even make any sense?
Yeah, whatever.
Why should I even say that? Yeah, whatever. Anyway, we're taking a friggin' break. Let's listen to some commercials for some great pods you should be listening to. And when we come back, we kind of want to talk about a more serious topic. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm down.
All right, cool. See you on the other side.
This is Let's Talk Flicks.
We're going to China.
Why are we going to China?
Because they're going to make a Tetris movie.
Tetris?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. What are they going to do?
You know, literally.
What are they going to come up with next?
Literally, I woke up last week.
A Tetris movie? What the fuck?
I woke up last week in a cold sweat saying, oh, my God, I want a Tetris movie. And then, bam.
There
Tetris
you go.
Tetris movie comes.
Let's Talk Flicks Wednesday night at 9:30 right here in the Podcast Radio Network.
Are you afraid of what goes bump in the night?
Have you or your friends ever pondered a conspiracy?
Do you want to know more about the unknown?
If so, then put on your tinfoil hat, sit down, and pick up your computer, tablet, or phone. Go to iTunes or YouTube and search for Secret Transmission Podcast and listen to us try to explain the unexplainable.
Follow us on Twitter for updates on shows.
At Secret Trans Pod. That's SecretTransPod.
Or you can email us suggestions
at secrettransmission@hotmail.com. That's SecretTransmission@hotmail.com.
Hey guys, this is Bill.
This is Phineas.
And together, we're the Tattooed Bananas. We do a comedy podcast, and on our comedy podcast, we talk about all kinds of wacky crap, like
nutscaping.
I'll tuck you in tonight.
Turning your funeral into a funeral.
Can I have an ice pop? Can I have a candy?
Dick fishing, furniture banging, and so much more. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and connect with us with the Potter and Family hashtag on Twitter.
Yeah, don't forget to check out the Instagram. Throw a bag of bagels at someone's head.
Do you ever wonder when Spider-Man goes to the bathroom if the toilet paper sticks to his fingers?
Do you ever wonder why Superman wears his underwear outside of his pants?
My name is Imran.
My name is Anthony.
He's the jock!
And he's the nerd.
And we're your hosts for the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we sometimes try to attempt to answer these questions.
This is a full spoiler podcast, and we swear a lot.
Check it out for awesome geek news, interviews, and comic book reviews. Visit jockandnerd.com. We are your superhero TV, movies, and comic book culture curators.
Boom.
Jockandnerd.com.
Jock and Nerd!
Okay, we're back from break. Again, those are some great pods you should totally be checking out. They're friends of ours on Twitter, and they share a lot of our stuff, and I really appreciate it. I want to talk to you a little bit about race and gender in comics. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I noticed lately there's been a fair amount of talk about it because take some of the cinema stuff, like the Black Panther movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was a conscious effort by Marvel Studios to make sure the director was African American.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman from DC, they wanted to make sure the director was a woman. Back to Black Panther again, the comic, the creators working on the comic currently are African American creators.
Yep.
Even in gender, it seems that people want women working on comics that star women. Or there's even the case I brought up, Phil Jimenez, who's an openly gay artist and writer, and now he's working on Superwoman. What are your thoughts about all this kind of like reality and race and gender and sexuality coming into the comics forefront?
Personally, I think it's really great because I see comics as any other, it's any other kind of medium. It's an art medium. It has elements of literature and of fine art. So I see it as a perfect way for people to be included in that. When you talk about things like having African Americans direct the Black Panther movie, that's cool because they are going to be directing it from a more culturally involved point of view. So for example, someone who hasn't experienced the culture can't write something about it. They can only view it as somebody from the outside, not as somebody who's immersed in that culture. So like somebody can't necessarily write about my life as an American who also has an Ecuadorian Puerto Rican identity. You know, you can see it from the outside, but to actually feel it and express it artistically is different. You can write about it, you can analyze it, but to actually experience it and have it culminate into some kind of art, it's not going to work the same because it's creativity. Creativity is unique. Knowledge, you learn knowledge. Knowledge eventually comes. There's always the thing about like math, for example. It doesn't matter who figures it out, where they're from, math is going to be, it's going to be discovered. But art is unique and tied solely to an individual. So for somebody to come in like that, be it gay, lesbian, African-American, Latin, Asian, you're going to get a different perspective. One that may not be in line with what people expect, but it's going to be not necessarily more authentic, but it's going to come from a place that is going to seem more real.
Okay. Even though we're talking about fiction, but you believe that if someone of, you know, a gender, a race, if they work on a character that you think they can relate better to these characters than anybody else?
I think that they can relate a little bit more, but they won't necessarily create a better story. That is whether or not they can, you know, produce that artistically. But somebody who can relate to, like, when they created Miles Morales, it's not necessarily about it being a good story, but it's being able to be like, hey, I can see myself in that.
You can see yourself in it, right? But the thing is, what I'm trying to say is Brian Michael Bendis is a chubby, white, bald, white guy.
Right, right.
Well, he's writing an ethnic character who's young, so he's writing also a teenager. Mm. So how can he relate to teenagers if he's a full-grown adult? How can he – you know, listen, I'm not trying to be overly devil's advocate here, but I kind of got it because with Black Panther, the director is Ryan Coogler. He did the movie Creed. Fine movie. Great – you know, he did an awesome job directing it. That's the merit which I think they should be focused on, that he's a good director. But it seems like all the news that I see, and it could be the way the media skews it, I don't know. But they keep trying to say, well, they're looking for an African-American director. They need someone African-American to work on this. And I'm thinking, okay, you're kind of forcing the issue. Because Black Panther is in Wakanda, which is a fake place. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're finding someone who's like from Wakanda who can relate to the issues of Wakanda. This is all fiction, man. When people focus on the race, the gender, the sexuality of these creators, to me, it doesn't matter a lick. I don't care who's writing it, who's directing it, as long as it's good. And I don't think that necessarily someone of that specific gender, race, and I keep saying this is like it's a list, but what I'm trying to say is it doesn't mean they're always the most perfect candidate for the job. If you do enough research and if you immerse yourself enough in a topic, anybody can write anything. A man can write a woman can write a man, a black person like Dwayne McDuffie. I mean, for Christ's sakes, one of the great writers over at DC and Marvel, God rest his soul, one of the most prominent early African-American creators. He did a lot of white characters, and you pick up the book and you couldn't tell me if it was written by a white guy, a black guy, Asian-American person, anybody, because he's just an excellent fucking writer.
For that, someone can definitely write in that same way, through that same eye. But the difference isn't always so glaringly obvious. It's like little things. It's like, for example, you know, the whole Spanish stereotype is like, okay, we have rice and beans and stuff. Let's just say, like, let's just like throw like a really blanket statement, right?
Okay, right.
But what somebody who isn't of that culture isn't going to necessarily talk about the difference between rice and beans.
Well, no, what I think you're trying to say here is like, there's more things, like someone could refer to a barbecue as a carne asada.
Not even that, because that's still on the surface of it. So,
okay.
For example, when I talk about rice and beans with my mom versus my grandma on my dad's side, they have two different ideas of what that is. And that in and of itself is something that somebody who isn't raised to be that or isn't raised in that environment won't realize and won't associate as it being like from two totally different universes. Because if you ask my mom to make rice and beans and you ask my grandma to make rice and beans, you could get like two different, completely different things, even though they consist of the same ingredients. And for when it comes to making these comics, making movies, it's going to be those very subtle things that'll connect with people, that'll make it seem more real. You can have a good story that doesn't include those things, doesn't include things about culture. And even if it does, it's the little subtle details that actually make it that much more impactful. And that's why DC and Marvel try to reach out to people who have grown up with that, are immersed in that. It's why people want to hear stories from those kind of people. It's because they have a more personal connection and they're going to be able to produce that more detailed and subtle art.
But I, again, full disclosure here, I'm a white guy. I'm a chubby, fat, late 30s white dude. You know what I mean? So I can't relate to a lot of, I mean, as you know, I travel abroad. I've been to Mexico quite often. My wife is Mexican. So I do kind of throw myself into the Spanish culture, the Latin culture, rather, the Mexican culture. But what I'm trying to say, and what I'm trying to get across here is that with any amount of research, anybody can produce anything. I do believe that it's important to diversify in comics, in the world, in every industry, in society. I think we have to be tolerant of other people. I think we should accept all people of skin colors, preferences, you name it. The world should be a loving, groovy place, man. And I think there should be more creators in comics and movies of the same type.
Right. I agree with you. But for me, some things, you have a Mexican wife, but there's going to be some things, no matter how much you immerse yourself, no matter how much you share with her and she shares with you, there's going to be some things that you'll never be able to understand because you weren't raised there. You weren't born there. You weren't from the very moment of your birth, part of that.
Part of the community is what you're trying to say too. Part of the,
yeah, part of it, part of that community. And even if you come in and totally immerse yourself, there's going to be little things that, from something as simple as a style of hair to a certain smell, like that's the depth at which the culture goes. And that's something that some people, I'm not saying that you don't understand it, but I'm just saying that sometimes that gets overlooked, that because it's not something that's overarching. It's not something big. It's not a big topic. And you can learn about it. Definitely. You can read, you can do your research, but when it comes down to it, you're not going to understand it. You can spout out the information, but it's not going to be something that you can connect to personally. And it's not going to be something that you can intrinsically, like, it'll strike a nerve with you. It'll be like, oh, you know, that's interesting. I know about it because this is that. But for me, you know, something as, like, just I was saying, like, the difference between the rice and beans between my mom, who's Puerto Rican, and my grandma, who's Ecuadorian, like, that to me strikes a deep nerve because, to me, it's my place in my heritage. But to somebody else, it's going to be like, oh, you know, those are two distinct cooking styles because one is Caribbean, one is South American. But to me, no, man, that's like a deep divide in my personality.
Which one do you like better?
Personally, the Puerto Rican ones, because my grandma makes them dry, because that's like the way you eat food in Ecuador in the mountains.
Grandma, don't listen to the podcast. Don't listen to sweet little Marco's podcast. He ain't digging on your beans.
They're good. It's just like, if I had a preference, it'd be like my mom's, because they're more like watery.
Listen, I just want to get down to the nitty gritty. I think that the media, the news, the comic sites, everything, they really stress, oh, this studio is searching for an African-American director.
Mm.
Cool. I dig where you're coming from. There's a certain perspective that director, or for example, Ryan Coogler might have, then let's say even Steven Spielberg, for Christ's sakes. Mm. You know what I mean? And I get that. But to keep saying, like, we have to find a director of this color, to me, that's a little like, you're kind of making the story irrelevant. You're more worried about what kind of skin color of the director, or the gender of a director. Example for Wonder Woman, who is being directed by Patty Jenkins. That I'm sure they're both going to do a fantastic fucking job. They're outstanding directors. But again, the way the media keeps throwing it out at me is like, they had to have someone of this color. They had to have someone of this sex. They needed this. And it's like, why? You know what I mean? I to me, it's too much.
Yeah, like it's getting like sensationalized.
Yeah, wicked.
Yeah, and to an extent, I get where you're coming from, because I can definitely attest to that. It's like, oh, okay, like everybody's trying to be like super cool, and like everybody has to be
PC.
Yeah, yeah, and in a lot of ways, that, you know, for me, it's good. You know, I dig that. I don't want to be called, you know, a Mexican when I'm not. No disrespect to Mexicans, just that's not who I am. You know.
No, right.
So in that aspect, PC for me is like, all right, cool. I'm totally down with it. But in other aspects, I always go to the side of satire. And for me, it's always easy to lampoon something like PC culture. And there are the good aspects, and then there's bad aspects of it. Not bad aspects, but just different aspects. And that's in any medium, you know, in anything. And everybody has, I guess, a tipping point for it. For me, I don't necessarily mind that they're bringing in these kind of directors, because to me, it's like, oh, dude, it's an African-American guy and he's directing a movie. That's crazy. If it was like a Spanish guy directing, I'm like, oh, dude, that's a Spanish guy. Like, I can be that guy because he's there. So for me, it's more if he makes it, then I can make it, right? For a lot of people, it's that also. And that's why people try to reach out. That's why more shows are trying to be more inclusive. You have, what's this show, like Fresh Off the Boat, which is an Asian-American family. You have Blackish, which is an African-American family. And in those respects, those networks are making good steps, but they call it Blackish because they don't want to make it black. You know, they don't want to be like, oh, no, they're not totally black. They have some aspects of where white Americana can relate. And the same thing with like Fresh Off the Boat in itself, in at least in New York City, was used as kind of a derogatory statement. So when they made a show called Fresh Off the Boat, I was a little confused and kind of like taken aback. I'm like, okay, what's all this about? And I understand the attempt is to make it more inclusive, and people want to be able to see themselves represented in media, because it's like, hey, you know, if they can do it, so can I.
Yeah, I follow that. That's cool. I dig it. I understand what you're saying completely. And, you know, for me, coming from the white guy's perspective, I mean, listen, if we want to talk about ancestry or anything like that, white people have created or caused all the atrocities in the freaking world since the dawn of time, basically. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, that's, it's like saying to me, okay, I'm not black. I'm not Hispanic. But I've seen a lot of things in my lifetime. I've seen a lot of poverty, a lot of pain, a lot of anguish, a lot of things I shouldn't have seen, the underbelly of the world, of life. You know what I mean? And it's like saying, well, Dave, you might experience a lot of shit, but you're really not qualified to write a Latin American character because, you know what? You're a chubby white dude.
Well, that's the thing. It's not trying to be exclusive. It's trying to be inclusive. Like, there's no... It's not one or the other. It's both. It's like, we can have a white writer writing Miles Morales, but we can also have a Spanish writer writing Miles Morales. It's not, oh, because this guy comes up, a white guy can't take it. It's not saying that. It's saying that you can have both.
And hence my problem with the way the news was kind of released by...
Right, exactly.
Obviously, Marvel Studios did this on purpose. They put it out there. Beforehand, they were looking for an African-American director, when in all reality, they could have just hired him. And then afterwards, everybody would have been like, oh, wow, this is fucking great. That was a really good choice. You know what I mean? Mm. But instead, they made it seem like they were forcing the issue, like, making it exclusive. And it's like, look at this new Spider-Man movie that's coming out, Homecoming. Who is the woman that said was playing Mary Jane?
Oh, yeah,
Zendaya? Was that her name?
Something like that.
Yeah, and I don't really know her work or anything like that, but to me, I'm like, yeah, cool, cast her as Mary Jane, I don't care. Right. But they said it after it was cast, you know? Mm. Some people lost their minds, oh, how dare she be black? And to me, it's like, dude, it's 2016, you know? It's like even our last pod where we talked to Leandro Fernandez, where I was talking to him about, like, updating certain characters, and he's like, you got to stay up with the times, man.
Yeah.
And he's right, you know? And if Peter Parker grows up in New York City nowadays, he's not surrounded by a bunch of white kids. There's a completely diverse cast around him.
Especially not in Forest Hills.
Yeah, hell, you know? So it makes a lot of sense. And I kind of wish they did that with the directorial news and stuff like that, like after the fact. Oh, we got this guy. Oh, by the way, Wonder Woman's being directed by Patty Jenkins. Oh, cool. Mm. She's a woman. Good fit. You know what I mean? Not, we were searching for a woman director. So we basically took all the guys off the table, all the African-American people, all this, you know what I mean? We took everybody off the table because we were looking for a woman, you know?
Mm.
To me, it's like, geez, man, you know, you don't need to do that. And again, the news gets out there because the studios make it so.
Right.
They call it leaks, but they do it all on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Zendaya stuff. Marvel put that out there. They didn't have to, but they wanted to because they want to create controversy. They want to create buzz about the movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I don't care who writes anything. When I pick up a book, I'm colorblind. You know what I mean? You don't see who wrote the book. So it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter to you anyway. Well, it shouldn't be a big deal. Go on. No, what are you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, well, that whole notion of being colorblind, it's like, it's always been a funny topic because it's like, it's not that we, sorry to single you out, David, but it's not like white people do that a lot. It's like, it's not that we want you to be colorblind. It's like, we want you to recognize that that we are different, but it's not a big deal. It's not a problem. It's like, we're just another person. I look different from you. You look different from somebody else. That's totally cool. You're not trying to be colorblind. You're trying to be accepting of it. That's what people get mixed up. People are just like, oh, you know, I don't see race. It's like, no, dude, race is made up. Totally. But being able to spot differences and just being accepting of it, that's totally fine.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is when you pick up a book and it says a name, you don't see if that person, where they're from, who, if they're fat, if they're skinny, if they're black, if they're white, if you know what I mean? Anything. And that's what I mean. But when I say, when I pick up a book, I'm colorblind. I don't know. I mean, more than color, I'm completely, you have no idea. You base everything on the merits of that story alone.
Mm.
Not of anything else. There's nothing else. You know what I mean? If you took the name away, even, I wouldn't know if a woman or a man wrote it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But I could say that's a good story. And to me, that's the only thing that should matter.
Yeah, it's the only thing that should matter, but sometimes people don't always do it.
I appreciate diversity. I mean, again, I'm married to a Mexican woman. My son is half Mexican, half American, you know?
Does he speak Spanish?
Yes, he does. Cool. He's bilingual. He speaks more Spanish than I do, for crying out loud. But that's what I mean. There's certain things about other races I love. I mean, and in this world, and especially in these times that we're dealing with right now, and especially in America, and I don't want to get too political because we're a comic book pod yet again, and we're only talking about race and stuff because it's an issue right now in comics, or it's something, I shouldn't even say it's an issue, it's just more as a conversation topic right now within comics. But it's a scary world out there, man, and there's a lot of people that don't appreciate diversity, don't appreciate what's out there, that like you said about the rice and beans, that you can go and meet two different people, have two different completely awesome experiences, you know, and they're out there to be had, but you have to open yourself up to experience these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of the world. Otherwise, you're living in a closet. You know what I mean? You're living in a closed. The world is a big fucking beautiful mud ball spinning in the cosmos, baby. Enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Try new things. Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. And your son, he's definitely going to have that experience because, speaking from somebody, you know, who's of two different cultures, he's gonna be able to relate to that, and like, he's gonna be able to have the best of both worlds. Your wife can't understand everything about American culture, and you're not gonna be able to understand everything about Mexican culture, but your son's gonna be he's gonna be ingrained in both, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and he's also gonna be able to say ka.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so he's gonna be able to speak Spanish, Mexican Spanish, and have a little New England accent, which is pretty rad. He even does that right now, and it kind of confuses people.
Does
so,
he?
Hey, what can I say? Yeah, he sounds like his old man. What can I say? I try to control it. As you know, I'm an English teacher, so when I teach English, I have to, you know, pronounce the word car like that. But when I'm at home and I'm chilling, I don't. I'm like, oh, geez, that, Chris, that's a, my son's name is Chris. Chris, look at that car. It's so fast. And he's like, oh, wow, that's a fast car. I'm like, yeah, you know. But anyway, just to get down to the let's boil it down, is that you think it's super important or not super. Tell me, basically, you think it's important that these issues are addressed and that directors and writers notably work on characters that relate to their situation, right? Or their life, their skin color, their sexuality, their whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think it's important, but I also don't think it should be sensationalized. It's just something that should feel natural. It's something that shouldn't be a big deal, but unfortunately it is in a lot of cases. And, you know, going on social media and stuff, you hear a lot of it. It's like, oh, why are they just doing this? Why are they just doing that? Who is this person? Just like what you were talking about before. It's important, but it shouldn't be a big deal. And that's something that people who, that's something that people are trying to fight for, just trying to make this normalized. Because in America, especially, you know, right now, again, not trying to get too political, but it's getting scary for people who are minorities. I don't think it should be, because that sucks. You know, I live here too.
No, I agree. And I, you know, in many ways, I think you're more right than I am on the issue, not just because, you know, you of your heritage and everything, but because we agree on the sensationalism. Okay. Mm. And that's the part that drives me crazy. But at the same time, maybe we do need a little bit of that, because you're right. At this point in time, there aren't enough, or there isn't enough diversity out there where it's not a big deal anymore. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
You know, and maybe for me, I'm like, yeah, it shouldn't be a big deal. But for other people, yeah, it needs to be a big deal because there isn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe I can see it. I can see it from that point of view. But I really do hate forcing the issue. I really do. I can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we both agree the world needs to change. It's always slow, and it's been really way too slow, because how long has the human race been around so far, you know?
Right.
Since we're kind of done talking about race, as I'm so not articulated when I do discuss it, is I do want to put it out there for all the comic fans that read Detective Comics number 940. Did you get a chance to read that?
I skimmed it.
Okay, you skimmed it. Well, the ending was the big shocker. When Tim Drake supposedly was the Robin was killed in battle, and then the mysterious Mr. Oz showed up and saved him by putting him in a pocket of time. I want to put my money on the table right now that I think that's Rorschach from The Watchmen. I don't think it's Ozzy from The Watchmen. Everybody else is like, oh, that's Mr. Oz. It has to be Ozymandias. Did I even say that right?
I think it's Ozymandias.
Ozymandias, right. Oh, it's Mr. Oz, Ozymandias. No, for me, I think it's Rorschach. I want to put the money down. I want to put the bet on the board. Right now, I'm the first person to say it's Rorschach. Whoa, you challenge me yet again, my friend.
I don't know. I think
it's... Why don't you know?
Well, if it's time travel and like universe hopping, it has to be Dr. Manhattan.
But why would Dr. Manhattan even bother himself pulling people out of the timeline or pulling people out of death and whatever? He's the cause of all this shit. And then with Ozzy, I'm like, that's too obvious, Mr. Oz, Ozzy. You got the obscured face. This guy obviously has an agenda, and I think he's going to take on Manhattan, I think. Who got annihilated? Who got evaporated by Manhattan at the end of Watchmen? Rorschach, right?
Right.
So I don't know. We can agree to disagree, as we often do, but I'm going to put my money on this. And if I'm right, we're going to make a bet.
Okay.
Yeah. What kind of bet do you want to do? How about, I get an idea. How about if I'm right, you have to pour a can of beefaroni down your pants?
Beefaroni?
Yeah, beefaroni. You know, Chef Boyardee beefaroni? Big fan when I was a kid. I'd come home sick from school, turn on The Price is Right, eat some beefaroni.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Well, there you go. If it's Rorschach.
I have to eat a can of beefaroni.
No, not eat it. You have to pour it down your pants. Okay?
Okay.
All right. And then if I'm wrong and it is Ozzy, what do you want in return? Either of us, how about this? If either of us loses, we have to someone will have to take a picture, I guess, but we'll have to pour ourselves, because that's even worse. The fact that you're doing it to yourself, pouring this beefaroni down your pants. Let's call it the beefaroni bet. I like that. Hashtag beefaroni bet 2016 right here on Splurch. Deal?
Yeah, okay.
All right, cool. I like it. Anything else you want to talk about this podcast? Because I got some shout outs I want to do.
No, I'm good. You can go ahead with the shout outs.
Again, we're on Twitter. You can follow us at Parlapod, and I want to thank some of the accounts that follow us and share a lot of our stuff. You should definitely go check these guys out at Drunken Dork from the Jake and Tom Conquer the World podcast, HMH cast, the Heavy Metal Horror cast, Secret Transmission podcast. Great dudes. Great family, the Von Doom family over there. We play their commercial every episode. They share all of our stuff. Love them to death. Let's Talk Flicks. Both of these guys are also partners on podcastradio.net. Drift and Ramble, Buzz Beers and Brutality. I want to give a shout out to my buddy Upstate Nate, who started listening and he loves the show. And this week I asked for some recommendations on Twitter for reads, and I got an interesting one from at Meerkuts, and they said they were reading Greg Rucka's Lazarus, and they also said there's a really good book called The March by Lewis and Aiden, and I just looked that up, and it does look really cool, and if Meerkuts is listening, I will check that out. Tattooed Bananas, we have another bet with them over the Cleveland Browns playoff hopes or chances, which don't look very good, so shout out to them as well, and to my homeboy Rockefeller Kneeboy, who's living in the slums, living in the ghetto, eating cockroaches, and living on shreds of soap. I don't know. I just made that up. But anyway, do you got any shout-outs, Marco? You got anything you want to promote?
I have, if anyone's in New York, I have a show coming out. We're going to be performing at the Delancey again on September 30th, which is a Friday at 10 p.m.
And this is your band, Voodoo.
Yep. You can check us out on Instagram at voodoo.band and on Facebook for Voodoo.
And of course, we are the Splurch, a Parlapod podcast. You can find us at parlapod.com. We are aired every Tuesday night at our new time, 9 p.m. Eastern, on podcastradionetwork.net. Connect with us at Parlapod on Twitter. Follow the Parliament of Trees Facebook group. Join in. A lot of great Swamp Thing discussions on there. And thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. And we will see you again next week.
See you guys. Thanks for listening.
Booyah!